the FWA podcast from William Hill. Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Yes, hello once again, the FWA podcast from William Hill. Every week we speak to one of the best football writers in the country, all part of William Hill's association with the Football Writers Association. Delighted to say this week, David McDonald joins us. He's the Daily Mirror's Manchester football correspondent. Are you well, David?
I'm well, Lee. Good morning to you.
Yeah, morning. Fresh from a trip to Germany in midweek to watch Manchester United in the end go out. I'm just wondering what it was like in the press box when that Evra goal went in. I've seen. I was driving listening to it, and you know, I'm not a Man United fan. Just you know, as a neutral and a supporter of the Premier League, I was punching the air. Not for long though, unfortunately.
Well, they'd done so well up until that point. It was a fantastic strike from Evra. I think if you'd asked him to do it, you know, 99 times out of 100, he wouldn't have found the net. But it was a wonderful strike. And up until that point, United's tactics had worked, just as they had done at Old Trafford a week earlier. They thwarted Bayern. Of course, any time you play a team of Pep Guardiola's, they're going to have possession and you're going to have to be patient. I thought United did that. They had a few scares, but they defended deep and they sort of did what they had to do. And of course, their tactic was to try and soak up that pressure and hit them on the break. But unfortunately, you know, within 22 seconds of the restart of United taking the lead, they conceded and the whole tactical plan fell apart thereafter.
Yeah, and they really couldn't get back on track then, could they? I mean, it was must have been difficult. Once Bayern Munich got the bit between the teeth, they looked suddenly. We were kind of questioning, I guess, for a game and a half. Well, is this Bayern Munich that we remember? And then suddenly they started to look like that Bayern Munich again, didn't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it was a testament to how well United did in the first leg. I mean, you know, it's been a very difficult season for United this year. I mean, it was always going to be difficult, the transition after Ferguson had left. But I think, you know, they haven't done themselves justice this season. They're 17 points behind, you know, Liverpool. It's been a really difficult season for them. But I thought they equipped themselves well in that first leg. But it was always going to be a tall order, you know, going there. I mean, I know obviously Arsenal and City and Chelsea had all won in the Allianz Arena. But United, they're a team in transition. They're missing, obviously, Van Persie. Rooney wasn't fit. Clearly, he's struggling with this bruised toe. And it's a major doubt whether he'll play a huge role for the rest of the season. So there were lots of things against United going into that game. And as I say, as soon as they equalised through Mandzukic, they seemed to fall apart and they lost their shape and their discipline. And really, it was pretty easy for Bayern thereafter.
Chelsea, often Jose Mourinho will watch his side muster up a fairly routine 2-0. It wasn't routine by any stretch of the imagination, but they got the job done and now they are in the semi-finals. The draw's just been made as we record this, David, and they've got Atletico Madrid, the first leg, Atletico Madrid v Chelsea, and that means Real Madrid versus Bayern Munich. So Mourinho's on course, and you know, we've been reading in the past kind of 12 hours about Courtois possibly not being able to play against his parent club if they were squared up. So and yeah, you know, there's no reason, I suppose, why Chelsea would give in on that. So Atletico without one of their best players for this semi-final as well.
Yeah, I think Lee, if I'm right, I think UEFA have just ruled that agreement that Courtois couldn't play against Chelsea is null and void.
All so right, okay. All right.
Yeah, I think he's okay to play, and I support that.
He should play, shouldn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's scandalous that the Premier League has this, you know, rule in place whereby, you know, players on loan cannot face their parent clubs. My own personal view is that if your club deems you surplus to requirements or not good enough, then they really shouldn't fear playing you. You know, when you. You know, when they come up against your loan club. So I'm pleased that UEFA have taken that stance, and I do hope the Premier League will follow suit. But yeah, they're two fantastic matches in prospect. I think everyone was obviously hoping for Chelsea and Real Madrid, so Mourinho could come up against his old club. Mm. That may still happen in the final, of course. But I mean, when you get to this stage, you know, the games are the highest quality. You know, normally it's the highest caliber of teams that get through to the last four of the Champions League. And I think, you know, Atletico, Chelsea won't relish facing them. You know, they proved in knocking out Barcelona in the quarterfinals that they are, you know, a real sort of force to be reckoned with, and they've proved that this season in La Liga. They're up there pushing, you know, the two established sides and the two sides, Real Madrid and Barcelona, who are enormously slogging it out, and they've kind of gate crashed that. And so I don't think Chelsea will relish playing them, and it's going to be fascinating to see how that unfolds. I don't think Mourinho can sort of squeeze the life out of that at that time, like he often has done in the past. He always finds a way to beat opponents and often sort of suppresses them and plays very pragmatic football and just sort of kills the tie. But I think Atletico is going to find it difficult to suppress them. So, yeah, it's going to be a fascinating tie.
Yeah, it is. Bayern Munich are the favourites to win the Champions League at William Hill, 6-4. Real Madrid are 5-2. Atletico Madrid, 7-2. And Chelsea, 4-1. I don't know what it is about this, the way this is worked out, though, but I fancy whichever team comes out of the Atletico Chelsea game to win the whole thing.
Well, absolutely. I mean, it'll be whoever gets through, it'll be an incredible final, of course, whether it's Bayern, Real Madrid, Chelsea, or Atletico. But I do think you're right. I think that if they can get through that, they will certainly fancy their chances. I think also we need to really sort of pay tribute here to Mourinho's record in the Champions League. I think this week by getting to the semi-finals, that's his 8th Champions League semi-final. Wow. Beating Sir Alex Ferguson, who was on 7, and that's a remarkable record, considering he's only done it in 10 years. It's taken him 10 years. I think it took Ferguson twice as long to reach 7 semi-finals. So Mourinho has that track record in the Champions League. We know he's obviously won it in the past with Porto and with Inter, so he certainly knows how to win these ties. And as you say, Lee, whoever gets through from that tie between Chelsea and Atletico will certainly fancy their chances.
Indeed, yeah. Chelsea, of course, involved in the Premier League title race, which we will have a look at in a minute. Just wanted to get David's thoughts on a betting market that I'm always interested in year in, year out, and that's the LMA Manager of the Year. We spoke about the Player of the Year last week, where Suarez is pretty much a cast iron favourite to win that. What about the Manager of the Year? This is an award that doesn't always go to the kind of the popular choice that you might imagine. David, I'll give the betting and then we can have a little chat about it. Brendan Rodgers is, as you'd expect, the favourite, around 5-6, but not a huge odds on favourite. Manuel Pellegrini then around a 3-1 mark. Then you get a big jump up to Tony Pulis, who's around 11-2. Roberto Martinez around 10-1. Mourinho 10-1. And then you get bigger prices than 25s and bigger, and really probably not many of those worth looking at. When I say that, what I mean is sometimes it's been the unfashionable. Like David Moyes has won this in the past, hasn't he, as Everton manager, a couple of times, I think.
Yeah.
And because of what they do, because it's voted for by the other managers, I guess it's not all about winning trophies. The other managers see something in what they've achieved. And that's why a lot of people have been talking about Tony Pulis, coming in with a team who were all but down and managing to, well, we hope, from their point of view, get to safety. What's your thoughts?
Well, I was going to say, Lee, I would think Tony Pulis would be a worthy recipient of this award. I think when he took over at Palace, I think it was late November, I think there was something like 6 points adrift at the bottom of the table, having in Holloway having left. And everyone, as you say, thought they were down. It seemed as though there was no way back for them. And yet he's transformed them. I think they're on 34 points. They're not mathematically safe, but looking at the table, there's a 7-point cushion between them and the drop zone, and you really can't see anyone hauling them back in. So I think it's a remarkable run and testament to certainly to Palace's faith in him. And I think you'll look around at possibly Cardiff and their decision to get rid of Malcolm Mackay and bring in Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, a rookie manager in the Premier League. Okay, he's done it at Molde. But I think a lot of clubs who are down there now will be looking around thinking, well, why didn't we look at Tony Pulis when he was available? Because I think he's obviously a shrewd manager. He knows how to deal with relegation battles. He knows how to get the best out of players in those kind of situations. And I think I'm right in thinking that the bottom seven clubs have all sat their managers this season. And of course, Pulis was available. So I do think a lot of clubs will be looking back and thinking, well, possibly he was one that really they should have gone for, and all credit to Crystal Palace for doing so. And in terms of the Manager of the Year, he's obviously a strong candidate for what he's achieved. But I think if Liverpool were to win the title, particularly in the 25th anniversary of the Hillsborough disaster, and moreover, because no one felt that they were candidates this season. I mean, even Brendan Rodgers himself felt that they're a team in transition. He's only been there a couple of seasons. They're progressing, but they're obviously ahead of the sort of schedule that he had in place. So I think if they were to go on and win it, and obviously there's a massive game at the weekend at Anfield against Manchester City that will go a long way to deciding the title. I think if Liverpool were to end their 24-year wait for the title, I don't think you could argue against Brendan Rodgers winning that award, despite what the likes of Tony Pulis have achieved at Palace since November. And, of course, Roberto Martinez, building on the foundations Everton that David Moyes laid.
Yeah, definitely. Only five on five occasions has the winner of the top flight won the award, and that's in the 20 years of the history, which is interesting. Mm. And obviously, it can come from outside the Premier League as well. I think on three occasions, managers outside the Premier League have won it. So there are the likes of Nigel Pearson in the betting, obviously, for getting Leicester promoted. Let's have a look forward to the Premier League and the FA Cup semi-finals. FA Cup semi-finals first, David, before we get your thoughts on that huge game, Liverpool v Man City. The way the betting is suggesting it will go, I mean, Arsenal and Hull are both favourites, but not the kind of prohibitive favourites that you might imagine them to be. Arsenal are 2-1 on to beat Wigan from the Championship, and Hull are 8-11 to beat League One Sheffield United. So a double on the two, you know, the two favourites getting through. Still pays, you know, around 8-5, which, you know, might be tempting for a few people. Do you think it will revert to form in the FA Cup semi-finals?
You would think so, Lee. You would think so. I mean, Arsenal, I mean, a lot of people are talking about how really it's more important now. Arsenal have sort of stumbled in the last few weeks in terms of the Premier League. And really looking at it now, it's more important in a sense, possibly from a psychological point of view, than anything else, for them to win the FA Cup. I think a lot of people are feeling that if they can't win the FA Cup now and in that 9-year trophy drought, then really Arsene Wenger's time may well be up at Arsenal. I mean, despite everything he's done, keeping him in the Champions League for, I think it's 15 or 16 consecutive seasons, and finishing the top four consistently during that time, I just feel that they need a trophy. They need to get that sort of hoodoo off their backs and do that. So I do think that despite Wigan's success in overcoming Manchester City, you know, in the quarterfinals and the great job that Uwe Rosler has done, you would think that the Arsenal have too much you know, for them at Wembley. It's a big pitch. And of course, Wigan won you know, last year in the final against Manchester City, so they are capable of upsetting the form book. But you know, a few of those players are obviously still there. But I just feel that Arsenal, despite their wobble, you know, have enough quality to overcome Wigan. It all depends, though, if their key players are back. I think Ramsey may be back as well, you know, for that one. And it also depends which Arsenal turn up on the day, because as we've seen in recent weeks, mentally they're a bit suspect at the moment. You know, when teams go at them and attack them, they do tend to crumble. So they're both going to be fascinating encounters. I think as you say, Hull are favourites for that tie against Sheffield United. I mean, Steve Bruce is another manager who's had a fantastic season. We didn't mention him in the Manager of the Year you know, kind of category, but he's done wonders at Hull. You know, I don't think they've been in the bottom three all season. I could be wrong there, but I don't think they've been sort of flirting with the drop zone at all. So that's testament to the job he's done. So I would expect, I mean, you know, from a betting perspective, I think I would go for an Arsenal-Hull FA Cup final. But of course, you know, as we know, you know, the odds can change, and you know, on their day, you know, either of those two sides could face an upset.
Big Premier League weekend. There's some really big games at the bottom of the table, but the main priority is the game between Liverpool and Man City. David's got a couple of minutes. He's got his day job to go and do, and go and see some managers about these games. So we'll be quick on this. 1:37 the game kicks off, obviously in honour of the Hillsborough victims, and it's going to be a very emotional occasion at Anfield. You cover the football in the northwest, of course, for the Daily Mirror. Massive game, one of the biggest games at Anfield I can remember, David.
Well, certainly. I mean, it's probably one of the biggest games for you know, a quarter of a century. I mean, of course, Liverpool last won the title in 1990. And even though they had a chance, I think they're back in 2009, when they pushed United all the way, I think they finished 4 or 5 points in the end, you know, off United in second place. They never really seemed realistic that they would, you know, overhaul United to win the title. So this is the first time for, you know, a couple of generations that they have a chance of winning the title. And of course, if they can win, they're on this great run at the moment, 9 successive wins in the Premier League. If they can maintain that against Manchester City, and beat them on Sunday, they'll be 7 points clear of City. And of course, it's in their hands then. City will still have 2 games in hand, but of course, the destiny of the title will be in Liverpool's hands. So it's a massive game. It's a huge game. I think, obviously, a draw would suit City, because, again, it keeps it in their hands with the two games in hand. Manuel Pellegrini has already told us that he's not going there for the draw. You know, he's an attacking manager by his very nature. And he feels that if you go there with the conservative mentality in any game, whether it's Liverpool or anywhere, that if you play for the draw as a manager, you invariably lose. So I think we'll see a very attacking positive display from Manchester City. It's going to be a fascinating encounter because you've got the two highest scoring teams in the Premier League going toe to toe. So I do expect a lot of goals. You know, I don't expect it to be a tight affair. I mean, we kind of tend to build these games up, and occasionally they end up failing to sort of live up to the hype. But I do think we're going to see an open game, and what a spectacle and prospect with the likes of Suarez, Sturridge. I think Aguero's back fit as well, and David Silva, playing in behind him. So it's going to be a fascinating encounter, and one I think everybody's looking forward to.
Yeah, every stat that you look at, it leads to goals on this. The amount they've scored, and Gerard and Yaya Touré have scored the most dead ball goals in the Premier League this season. We've asked all of your colleagues who've done the FWA podcast for a bet of the week, David. I don't know how much of a betting man you are, but is there one result that you from the fixtures this weekend that you would think will happen?
It's a difficult one. I think if I was a betting man, I'd probably go for a high-scoring draw at Anfield.
Right.
I just think that it's a bit set up for that. I think you could be looking at maybe a 2-2 or a 3-3. As I say, you've got the two highest-scoring teams in the Premier League, so I don't expect it to be a goalless encounter.
Yeah.
And I think that we'll certainly see some fireworks there.
You can back a score draw of any kind of anything, 1-1 and upwards at 3-1. A draw so basically anything, a 2-2 draw or bigger is 7-1, and then you can have the actual correct score. So 2-2 is 11-1 and 3-3 is 33-1. So there's a few ways in there. I hope you're right, David, because it'll be a fabulous spectacle to watch if it's a high scoring draw. Thanks for your time today. I know you've got to rush off, so thanks very much for squeezing us in, and have a great weekend.
Cheers, Lee. All the best.
Thanks, David. David McDonald there from the Daily Mirror. If you want to listen to this podcast, you can listen to it at williamhill.com/podcasts, where you'll find the rest of our wares as well, including the Masters stuff there. Footballwriters.co.uk will also host it. You can find it at Audioboo, or you can subscribe to all the football podcasts that we do at iTunes. Thanks very much for listening, and if you're having a bet on any of the markets that we've discussed, then very best of luck.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.